Welcome to Lead the Future, Epoch Times' new series in which we explore the ideas that are shaping the future of how we do business. We're here today with Bill Jensen of Simpler Work. Bill has been studying complexity in organizations for 25 years and is the author of 7 books. In his consulting work, he helps companies and people simplify the way they do their jobs. Hi, Bill. Welcome to Lead the Future.
Thank you for having me, Christine. I'm thrilled.
So you recently did a report about the future of work, looking at how companies need to change in the next 5 years. What did you find?
Well, first, our premise behind the research, everybody is coming out with all of these predictions about how technology will change us and how this will change us and how that will change us. I wanted to get behind all of that. So what my team and I studied was, regardless of what the disruptions are, how are we going to all make it work? What will the future of work look like from the perspective of how we as people need to change? So we found overall 3 basic findings, and the number 1 related to leadership. We found that mostly the future has already arrived, but too many leaders are actually holding it back because it comes wrapped in risks. We found overall that 86% of the people that we interviewed around the world said the number 1 thing we all have to change is free people to succeed, structure them differently, empower them differently, put them in teams together differently. But the challenge is, all of that leads to uncertainty, and our leaders want to package and box and manipulate everything so we have more certainty. So everybody is saying is we need to change the way we organize work and people, and the number 1 requirement is courage. As one of our interviewees said, the biggest challenge is the corporate immune system, the antibodies, the norms, the risk management, the bureaucracy in many companies that look to snuff out change and stop it. So what we need is the leaders who have courage to step up and say, this is what the futures look like and we're going to go there. And the challenge that we're having is not too many leaders have that kind of courage. That was the number 1 finding. The 2nd finding is that the workforce of the future are saying they're looking at the employment relationship very differently than most companies are right now. Most companies, they look at employees, if they're fully engaged, it means how does it benefit the company? And that's the end definition of engagement. What we found during our interviews is that most people are saying, I will come to work for you if you help me achieve my dreams and goals better than I could on my own. And during our research, what we asked people, what can you achieve your dreams and your goals where you currently work? Only 29% said yes. And that number gets even worse when we extract from it all the senior execs we interviewed and all the entrepreneurs we interviewed and all the people that work at entrepreneurial environments like Silicon Valley firms. When we talk about the mainstream workforce, only 9% of the people can achieve their dreams and goals where they currently work. So basically what the people we interviewed are saying is, the workplaces of the future have to serve our needs as well as the company's. Not just flex time and can I telecommute, but can you help me achieve my dreams and goals? And the 3rd finding that we found, again, all of this is, what do we need to do in order to make the future of work, as disruptive as it is, work? And the 3rd thing we found was that we have to embrace that the future of work is personal, and our personal accountabilities are going to revolve around how willing are we to be vulnerable. The future is unknown. It's putting yourself into an uncertain situation. And to succeed in the future, more and more of us have to be willing to put ourselves courageously into unknown situations. Those were the 3 basic findings that we found.
Mm-hmm. And so in your previous work, you've written a lot about simplicity. In fact, that was the topic of your first book, which is a huge hit. What do you mean by simplicity in the workplace, and how will it help workers and companies to navigate the future?
Simplicity was one of the core findings nested within the Future of Work study. And what we found is overall companies are still focused on making something simpler, which most companies translate as easier, and productivity and efficiency, making it easier and simpler for the company to succeed. The future of work and simplicity tie together because we need to be much more focused on being user-centered of the technologies. That means the end employee, not necessarily the company that's designing the process, but the end employee. We need to be much more empathetic to their needs. So there's a current movement out there called design thinking, and that's really what it is. It's empathy for the person, whether it's the customer or the employee, but whoever is at the end of the process that needs to get something done or have something achieved, that it's easier for them to get it done. And over the last 50 years or so, we've gotten better about focusing on the customer. The next movement in the future of work is simplicity for the entire workforce, not just to make – not because they're crybabies and they need it all easier for them, but because that's what's called enlightened self-interest. If we make it easier for the workforce, we make it easier for the companies to succeed.
Mm-hmm. And that requires clarity of purpose, right?
It begins with clarity of purpose and then designing all the way through. If this is what we want to achieve, our tools, our structure, our infrastructure, everything needs to be designed to be helpful towards that goal. And right now, we're not necessarily getting there.
Mm-hmm. And I know you do a lot of consulting work. Could you give me an example to illustrate how you make a company and people's work more simple?
Sure. I'll give you a couple examples from one of the world's largest banks. I was working with their performance assessments every quarter, and they were finding they weren't getting the performance assessments done because they took too long and nobody wanted to do them, and it was finger pointing and blame. I reduced the basic exchange between the manager and the employee down to two sides of a sheet of paper, a few simple questions on either side of the paper, and it formed the dialogue. Now, the conversation itself still needed to happen, but by giving the employee and the employer, the manager, the questions they needed to talk about, I was focused on working backwards from what would that conversation look like. So I made it real simple. It was just a couple questions, 5 minutes or so, and they could achieve so much more than they could have achieved in an hour. Yeah, another project I did for that same bank was I took their entire strategic plan, something that used to be hundreds and hundreds of pages long, and I reduced it down to one page. Now, the secret there was twofold. First, the structure. I changed the structure. Again, most of the problems we have is they're too corporate-centered, and most strategies and strategic plans are corporate-centered structured. What's our vision? What's our mission? What are our goals? What are our objectives? I reverse that to around how people communicate, and we all communicate through storytelling. Mm-hmm. So I put the anatomy of a story on a page. It was just four parts. And then I had the executives fill in the anatomy of a story. And what they discovered, most organizations, when they do this process, they find they leave out huge chunks of the story. And then it doesn't make sense to everybody who has to execute it. And the other challenge is also when you reduce something down to something real minimal, a minute, 5 minutes, or one page, it's you create a conversation about, what are we going to leave out? Simplicity is the art of maximizing what you leave out. So, I learned this. I've studied under Zen masters. I've studied this under the Bauhaus art movement, which was Swiss and German, about getting rid of all the extra extraneous stuff. And the essence of simplicity is the hard work to remove what is not necessary. So when I helped that bank, let's say, reduce everything down to one page, it was a long and difficult process, a long and difficult conversation, but they figured out what they could leave out in order to focus on what was truly important.
Mm-hmm. Well, I bet they loved you after you got everything down to two pages. But at the beginning of the process, I'm sure you met with some resistance. What are some of the things that cause resistance when there's a change like this?
In general, most of us have what are called unconscious biases. It's the way we look at the world. And we think certain things are supposed to work a certain way. And when something comes in and changes that, we get all up in knots. We don't know how to deal with things. And the challenge with most changes is there are definitely winners and losers through every change there is. So let's take the current craze about Uber and Lyft and others that are changing how taxis are run. This is a boon to the average consumer. You don't have to stand out in the rain, you know, hailing a cab. You can call and they come right away. You know where they're going to be. They report back to you. The technology itself is amazing. It's consumer focused, but it's changing the way regulations are done, the way taxi medallions are paid for. It's completely changing that. So the biggest difficulties is people believing certain things have to be done a certain way. And when I consult with senior execs, the biggest thing they're fearful of is how am I going to get things done if I give up control? I know I have to empower people. I believe I have to empower people, but I'm also responsible to the shareholders, to my boss above me, to everybody else about getting stuff done, about delivering the results. If I give up that control, how do I ensure we get the results? So it's a process of trusting another person. It's a process of, you said it earlier, being clear about goals and also translating those goals. It's meaning making and sense making. That doesn't happen on a PowerPoint presentation. That happens in one's heart and one's head. That's why I developed a communication model called Know, as in knowledge, K-N-O-W, Know, Feel, Do. Helping executives communicate quickly from their audience's perspective. What's the one thing the audience needs to know? Why should they care or feel, and what's the one thing you want them to do? I help executives communicate from their audience's perspective. That's the simplicity, and that gets rid of the fear when you're able to communicate from the other person's perspective.
Mm. And you mentioned also self-awareness, and that being crucial to leading to the courage that we need to navigate the future. Could you talk more about that?
All around the world, I do workshops all over the world and all different cultures, all different companies, all different languages. What fascinates me is usually, let's say it's a full day workshop and I start, let's say at 9 a.m. Usually by about 10:15 a.m., I have to outlaw the concept and the word they. Most people are looking to others. Oh, if only my boss understood what we are learning here today, everything would be better. Well, it's personal accountability is one of the first things. And then when I talk about personal accountability and I'm asking, do you understand what's on your shoulders? Usually around that same time, I quote a 1940s and 50s cartoon character called Pogo, and one of his quotes is, "We have met the enemy and he is us." What I have found is most people don't fully understand themselves, self-awareness. They think they do. They think they understand themselves, but most have not done the deep self-introspection of understanding who they are and why they do certain things and why they have certain attitudes about what should change and how certain things should be. So that self-awareness is the beginning of everything. Understanding why you think, not what the rest of the world is about, why you think certain things should be a certain way. Because when we can change, there's only one thing we have control over in everything in our lives. It's how we think and what we believe and what we choose to do. our beliefs and our conclusions and our choices. We control those. Everything else we don't have control over. So it's changing how you come to your own conclusions.
Mm-hmm. I guess a lot of things that happen in business, the decisions that get made, they tend to be, well, they're often quite knee-jerk reactions driven from an emotional place. Yeah.
Or we have strategies explained to us which are from the company perspective, you know, it's very logically lit. Somebody did scenario planning and it's all thought out, but it's not thought out from the individual's perspective. And what many of us are not aware of is even if something is laid out and the choice is clear, well, of course we should do X because this is what's happening in the world. What happens to the knee-jerk reaction is our own reaction. We start thinking about that and we find a way to justify or say, no, it can't be X, it has to be Y, because I'm more used to the way Y is done. So our knee-jerk reaction is also to refilter the outside world according to the way we want to see things.
I see what you're saying. So if the storyteller or the person communicating the change that needs to happen doesn't fill in all of those parts of the story, then people start spreading rumors and filling it in for themselves and doing it their own way, which could lead to huge messes.
Exactly. Either doesn't fill in the parts of the story or doesn't include me in the story. All great storytelling throughout all history, all of human history, around all campfires, around all the world. The person who's listening to the storyteller, they see themselves within the story. They see themselves. Joseph Campbell called it the hero's journey, that when you're telling a story of morals or change or conflict, whatever it is, in all different cultures, in all different languages, the person listening to that story sees themselves as the hero. Sees themselves in that role. So it's telling the story as to what does it mean to me? How am I involved in this change?
Mm-hmm. Very cool. What are you working on now?
Thank you for asking the question. It leads perfectly from our last question to the next one, which is I've done this future of work study and I found that personal vulnerability and I wanted to explore it. We all need to be more willing to embrace change. So the next book is called Future Strong and it's exploring the five different choices that make us stronger and ready to leap into any future. And the first choice is what we've talked about. Am I willing to embrace and understand who I am, why I make certain choices the way I do? So, for example, as I consult around the world, one of the things that I teach people is about time management, but not from the productivity perspective, from the perspective of everyone only gets 1,440 minutes every day, and everything we do uses a portion of someone else's life. Well, how I came to that conclusion was 21 years ago, my mom died, and they lost her in the hospital for 40 minutes. And those lost 40 minutes are part of who I am. This is why I am passionate about helping other people how they decide how they are going to use a portion of somebody else's life. I'm kind of helping everyone raise the bar on what we call respect. Respect is now not just am I kind and courteous to you and, you know, and respectful to who you are and your diverse way of thinking. Am I respectful of your 1,440 minutes every day? But that came from me fully understanding and exploring that my mom's death is crucial to who I am right now. So that helps me make decisions, that helps me guide how I think about things. And sometimes it serves me well, sometimes not. But I need to understand that in order to understand how I make decisions. So the book is called Future Strong, and it's about the five choices that we make And the very first choice is, am I willing to truly understand deeply who I am and why I make the decisions that I make?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very fascinating work. When is the book coming out?
It'll be out this fall of 2015.
Okay. Well, looking forward to it. Well, since the future is built in the present, what's one thing that we can do right now to make our work simpler?
Those 1,440 minutes, as soon as you hang up, either you, Christine, who's taping this, or whoever's listening to this, go give yourself a treat or go give somebody a hug. What we can do right now is take care of ourselves or somebody else a little bit more today. That's the best thing you can do to create a better tomorrow. Do something right now, as soon as you're done listening, to take care of yourself more or to take care of somebody else. Do that, and that'll create a better future for you.
All right. Thanks, Bill. And keep on leading the future.
Thank you, Christine.